Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where we scrutinise old picture postcards, front and back, but not for serial numbers and printers' names. Instead, we want to try and understand what it was that caused my guests to keep hold of these ephemeral cardboard oblongs. As I say, each time I welcome two guests, and it's their postcards that act as little handheld prompts to send us hurtling towards memories, mysteries and stories. I'm Tom Jackson, and I'm delighted to say that my guests today are actress and presenter and national treasure, Maria McCurlan, and Professor of Philosophy, Mark Kingwell. Mark and Maria, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Thank you for asking us.
Yeah, good to be here.
Now, Mark Kingwell, as I say, is a Professor of Philosophy at the University of Toronto, and his 18th book, count them, 18th book, Wish I Were Here, takes a philosophical look at boredom, social media, and what Mark calls the interface. Perhaps most importantly, he manages to squeeze into the book some postcards, not just as concepts and talking points, but actual colour plates illustrating postcards. We're going to hear a little bit more about Mark's ideas in the book later, as the postcards reveal themselves. Mark joins us today bearing a New Haven, Connecticut postmark?
Yes.
So why is that, Mark?
Well, I lived in New Haven for 4 years when I was doing my PhD in philosophy. And one of the things about New Haven, for anyone who's visited there, is that, of course, it's home to an Ivy League university, but it's also a blue-collar industrial town. And the Winchester Repeating Arms Factory was just down the street from where I was living for most of that 4 years. And it was a carriage trade town way back in the day. So it's always had a kind of industrial feel and connections to New York, of course, but also to Chicago and Montreal. And I thought of the places I've lived in Toronto for many years, and I've lived in Edinburgh and Cambridge and other places. But the places that probably had the biggest effect on my life course, I would have to pick New Haven.
And was that because it was a particular time in your life when you were still forming your kind of academic personality? Or?
That's partly it. Yeah, for sure. Because I started my PhD without any thought of having an academic career. And then nevertheless, that's what I ended up doing, which I love. I think it's the best job in the world. But the other things about New Haven are, at the time I was living there in the 1980s, it had the highest per capita murder rate of any city in the United States.
Oh, my God. Well, that wasn't connected to the gun factory, was it?
Not directly, although guns were available everywhere if you wanted them. A lot of it was drug trade related. It's a predominantly Black and Latino community, even though it's sort of figured as white. So all of these things make it, in my mind, a kind of microcosm of America as a kind of big concept. But I also, I met so many brilliant people there, and I had wonderful teachers and mentors. So it really kind of brings a lot of my life experience to one place.
Wonderful. And it stays with you.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Mark, here's the question. Do you still send postcards?
I do, but certainly not frequently. So it's usually a kind of act of faith. It's almost like, the rare times I go to church. So if I'm on the road somewhere, before COVID, I traveled a great deal for work. I would stop sometimes and send a postcard, usually to my spouse here in Toronto. But what's maybe more interesting is I get postcards from my students on their travels.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And
that's, is that because they know that you have an interest or?
Yeah, it is. And it's also that they share it. But it's such a nice thing. It feels so kind of throwback and wonderful to get a postcard sitting in my mailbox at the college where I teach.
Well, I think the joy of receiving a postcard is so easy to understand that it shouldn't be such a great leap for us to realize it's quite nice to send them as well.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. Well, we'll find out more about those cards in a bit. You, listeners, will know Maria McCurlan from her many appearances on Radio 2 particularly, and more recently on Virgin Radio, appearing alongside Graham Norton. But in her long career, you've also heard and seen her countless times in comedy shows and serious acting, here, there and everywhere. And Maria comes to us today with a TN34 Hastings postmark.
Yes, indeed. Although it is actually more St. Leonard's, but St. Leonard's is to Hastings as Hove is to Brighton.
And not grand enough to have its own postmark.
No, apparently not. In fact, you know, just telling you that today, it made me slightly furious, and I'm writing to Sally Ann Hart as we speak.
And this is where you spend a lot of time, down in Hastings.
I do, yes. I have a place in London too, but haven't really used it because, you know, no work, no life in London, no life anywhere, really. So I'm very lucky to be by the sea, which has been a source of great calm during these last kind of 10 months, isn't it? And a small dog, which helps.
Oh, lovely, lovely. And I heard quite a lot of seaside places have been sort of full of people turning up from outside to kind of try and get some of that calm. Have you had invasions at Hastings, or is it okay?
Well, a lot of people say they have, but, you know, look, I don't know. I can't be one of those sort of, you know, how dare you come to our town Nazis, because, look, it's a very small world. We're all suffering. Everyone's allowed to have some exercise. What are we going to do, frankly? Mm. You know, good luck to them. It's a very big sea and it's a very big beach, and yes, people can isolate. So,
I am looking forward to looking out at the sea. I think that's the one thing would be a nice feeling.
Well, I've always felt sort of living near the sea, which I've always kind of slightly gravitated towards, is that, you know, in every other area of life, you have four sides to your views, whereas you have a whole 180 degrees of sea here. Mm. So when everything gets bad on those other sides, those other views in the square, one can look out and just, you know, lose yourself in a very big horizon.
Yes, there's a vision of an escape, even if there isn't a real escape.
Yeah. Although I swim, so that's an escape.
Oh, in the sea?
It's very cold at the moment, let me tell you that. It's 4 degrees.
Wow, but you're still doing it?
Yeah, because it stops my mind frazzling.
Brilliant. It probably numbs your mind. You probably can't think.
Numbs everything. Well, it's lovely when it stops. Tom.
Yeah, good for you, though. Now, Maria, when did you last send a postcard?
Well, I sent a few postcards in the summer to various folk, you know, as a way of keeping in touch. Zooms are annoying, and, you know, certain people that I haven't seen for a long time and probably won't see for a long time. And, so I'm a big postcard sender, and good. I collect them too. There are lots and lots of junk shops here, junk shops and retro shops and so on. So I often go through them and keep particularly amusing ones or pretty ones or whatever. Old ones I like particularly, the older the better. I like the process of it. And in fact, I do remember being on holiday in Blackpool when I was about 9, being completely obsessed with dirty postcards. Oh. You know, those ones that say sort of a big lady with large bosoms who say, "No, I told you to get some lemon, not my melons," or things like that, you know, double entendre type or single entendre indeed.
And so began a great career.
Yes. And my early comedy steals were jokes from dirty postcards.
Yeah, well, those are kind of intriguing and a bit strange for when you're young as well, when you're a child, because you only half understand the jokes.
Well, yes, they're quite often about bosoms and about, you know, little Willy, and it's somebody having a wee in the sea or some such. But I just know, as a Catholic, my parents are quite strict. I was always, you know, quite cleverly steered away from the one of those spinning carousel things that had the dirty postcards on, to go and look at the views instead, or the pictures of Blackpool Tower. So I could tell that they didn't really like me doing it, which yes, obviously made me want to do it more.
The increased allure. Very good. Well, before we see and hear about the cards that Maria and Mark have prepared for today, I'll give you a quick card of mine. This is a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter and in the book. So it's an old card from which I'm selecting just a part of the message. So today, because we're not all face-to-face in the studio, my guests have sort of dope sheets with them, with pictures of the cards pre-printed. So if you'd like to turn to page 3, ladies and gentlemen, it's a picture of a sort of rather gothic-looking bit of architecture. It's the Market Cross at Chichester.
Ah, is that what it is?
With a traffic policeman at the bottom right.
Uh-huh.
He's obviously decided he wanted to be there the day they took the picture for the postcard. And this is a strange one, really. It's actually quite a nice card. It's from 1972, sent from Chichester, and it was actually written in Pontins Holiday Camp at Selsey on the 26th of August 1972, height of summer. And I just like the way they express themselves. This is someone called Arthur writing to Mr. and Mrs. Ford in Leatherhead in Surrey. Not so far away from there, really. And he says, just to say, we're enjoying ourselves here in company of about 1,000 others. So you can guess that it's a bit noisy at times. And then he says, I wish I'd brought my tape recorder to record the noise at meal times. And I just don't know if he means that, or if it's just a rather sort of sarcastic, nasty comment.
But, I think probably, you know, at those guest houses or wherever, there is an enormous clatter, isn't there?
Well, 1,000 people. And presumably it's in a big refectory at Pontins. It's going to be, you know, very communal living, really. I'll do another quick one. This is a picture of which college is it? King's College, Cambridge. There you are, through some trees and with some amazing daffodils, and someone sort of hiding behind a tree in a yellow coat. You can hardly see.
Rather nice.
Get out of the way. No, I'm staying here. Fair enough. And this card is from I think 1987. It's a little bit hard to see. It's been sent to Norwich. Actually, it's postmarked in Norwich as well, so it may not have actually seen Cambridge, really. And it says, I just thought, actually, this is a bit of a reflection on changing technology. It says, after 2 days of engaged tones, I conclude that your phone is out of order and send this card instead. So there you are.
That's wonderful, isn't it? That's ghosting in the old-fashioned sense, just leaving your phone off the hook.
It strikes me as quite sad, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I wasn't going to answer the phone, but you finally caught me via a postcard. But also, I think it's this sense that, you know, maybe postcards are just going... 1987, postcards are dying out a little bit, but they're still used when the phone doesn't work properly.
I love anyway. That, the engaged tone. It's something that we just, you know, we don't use that phrase anymore. Simply don't use it. You're engaged.
Right.
The only phone calls I get on my landline, which I get twice a day, are people trying to con me out of money.
Yeah. Who answers their landline anymore? Certainly I don't.
I don't have a cell phone, so I only use landline for voice, unless it's this kind of interface. But
you are retro, Mark.
Well, it's, you know, the pressure to conform is immense.
Is it a deliberate thing to not have too much technology?
Yeah, oh yeah, and I don't want to be too available. I mean, it's the self-protective agency.
Tell me about it. It took us a year to arrange this interview. Well, the COVID kind of got in the way as well, but anyway. Look, I should remind everyone listening at home, Pictures of these postcards will be available on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk. So you can see that cross at Chichester, you can see that policeman, you can see those daffodils, you can see that woman hiding behind the tree in Cambridge. Now, Mark and Maria, you've been kind enough to prepare some cards for us today and brought them along. Mark, let's start with you. What's the first card you've got for us, Mark?
So this is an image of the Woolworth Building in Manhattan.
It's lovely.
And it really is. It's beautiful. The tint is a classic palette from that period. And the story for me was that I found this card when I was rummaging through, you can't really call it an antique shop. It was an antique barn in New Hampshire where my in-laws live. And I came across this card right at the time that I was writing a book about the Empire State Building. And I was completely preoccupied and fascinated by the idea of skyscrapers and tall buildings in general, but especially in Manhattan. And at the time that this postcard was sent, the Woolworth was the tallest building in Manhattan before the so-called race for the sky in the late 20s and early 30s when the Empire State went up. And what I love about it is, as I'm sure everybody's noticed, in those days, people would often write over the image, as you see here. Mm. So he's drawn a line through the summit of the building, 570-odd feet, 55th story, was up this last winter.
And, I love it.
This was sent to what's called an RFD address in New Hampshire, which is what you would call a rural route or a communal post delivery point.
Oh, really? Because there'd be no postal service to go to the more outlying places? Or...
No, exactly. So it's the classic sort of last 100 feet problem that still exists in rural areas for, say, internet connection. So people would come and collect their mail. And I try to imagine this story because on the back he tells of more adventures in New York about going sailing in the bay between the foot of Manhattan and over to Red Hook and Brooklyn. You never see sailboats there anymore, I can tell you that. And so I imagine this young man who's gone off from maybe a farm or just some kind of homestead in New Hampshire to try to make his fortune in New York City. And this is his way of staying in touch with the family at the time. The Frank on this is a little bit obscure, but I think he probably sent it in 1912. It looks like 1912 to me.
Wow.
So yeah, it's it was such a find, because it just brought all of these things together that I had already had on my mind. And it's one of my, I have a number of postcards, but it's definitely my favorite.
It's funny how these postcards can resonate in different ways. Obviously, you've got a picture on the front, you've got a message on the back. In this case, you have a message on the front as well. And they can hook into different things that you're already preoccupied by or thinking about.
Yeah, exactly. And, because I found it in New Hampshire, it seemed to loop between, that still quite rustic, underdeveloped part of the United States and what you have to think of as the most densely built up and populated square miles of the whole country in Manhattan. And so it jumped out at me. This place that I'm mentioning, this barn, is stuffed with ephemera. There are magazines going back decades. There are menus from restaurants all over.
I'm getting quite jealous of this, you know.
I am too. I'm thinking, where is this place? I must go there.
Yeah, it's on the list now. It's on the list.
Yeah, you have to be willing to spend a few hours. But
no
I can
problem.
Tell you, I've brought away many treasures from there, including, a first edition of Carl Van Vechten's book called Parties, which is a neglected classic of New York life, and menus from famous old restaurants in Manhattan.
A first edition. How much did they charge you for that, Mark?
For the postcard or the book?
No. For the first edition.
$5.
Unbelievable. Oh.
Wow.
It's worth the flight.
Yeah, and the postcard was $1. So.
Oh.
And you can negotiate if you're so inclined.
And if you're buying in bulk, no doubt.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to buy their entire collection of Life magazines, they'd probably give them away for free just to get them out of the barn.
To have the space. I think there's a dynamic here where you're talking about the big city and the rural area. I think one of the things that really helped charge the kind of acceleration of the postcard boom, really, was this sense that people were leaving their rural areas or their places distant from a city and traveling to the big city. And of course, it's such a simple way to send back some kind of souvenir and keep in touch with your family at the same time.
Yeah, there was a series of migrations of that kind that really created urban North America. It happened here in Canada as well, and still continues. It was a while before the rural-urban population tilted to urban, but it's pretty decisive now. And New York, again, is the epicenter. It's the place where people go to try and realize their dreams, unless it's Hollywood, a different kind of dream, I suppose.
But
I agree. It's such a glittering kind of jewel in the aspirational constellation that people almost find it irresistible. You know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, famously.
And then the thing about cities at this time is they kept creating things that would photograph well. So suddenly there's the Woolworth Building, or there's an exposition in Paris, or there's, you know, something else being built. And suddenly there are these great views that you can send back to the far-flung parts of the country.
Yeah, and, you know, the design of the Woolworth that you see on the postcard is quite striking, because it's the first example that we know of a so-called setback building. So you can see that the bottom half is a kind of standard, fills the whole footprint. And then they decide to build a tower on top of that base. And this was a recurring concern about construction in Manhattan, that tall buildings were going to block the light. And so the well-known designer called Hugh Ferris, who came up with the setback design that you see on many of the vintage skyscrapers in New York, where, you know, a successive narrowing or slimming of the building as it goes up. So it's a kind of a hybrid building when you think about it. I find it quite beautiful. In person, it's very, very white. And there's a beautiful view of it as you walk across the Brooklyn Bridge from Brooklyn into Manhattan. So it remains a landmark and really one of the most, I think, I'm not sure it's beautiful exactly, but it's certainly one of the most striking buildings in New York.
Can we see steam? Is that steam, those white bits, or is that a damage to the card over the building to the left?
That is steam, yeah. So there would have been presumably... that's from furnaces within the heating systems of those buildings lower down. And it creates a really nice effect, I think, as it sort of points upward and to the left, and then the cloud formation is upward to the right, a little higher up on the card.
They were so lucky with that cloud formation, weren't they?
Yes.
They just caught it at just the right moment. And there's something you write about in your book, Mark, which is this notion of the interface, which is this thing, which is how we connect with technology or how we connect with various things and the effect it has on us and how it works. Is how would the interface, I mean, perhaps you better explain a bit better what it is, how would you find the interface with a postcard? If I pick up a postcard, what's going on there?
Well, I mean, one way to think about it is that postcards are, in effect, a social medium. They're in today's terms, they're equivalent of a combination of Twitter and Instagram. So you've got a limited amount of space to write a message, and you've got an image that you want to share, and they combine in this material object that you can then send through a technological system, you know, namely the mail delivery. But I think maybe more interesting to me was that when I started writing about boredom, somebody sent me a copy of Martin Parr's book, Boring Postcards, which I'm sure everyone knows.
Yes. A classic.
Yeah,
we love that one.
Yeah, and I started thinking about how boredom is either conveyed or found in images, and that really gave me my title, because, you know, the classic, the cliche message is "Wish you were here," And because I was writing about boredom as a sort of displacement of self or unrest, you know, restlessness, inability to be in the moment, I thought wish I were here was the right title. You know, I wish I could be here right now.
Yeah.
And so the interface is just a general term. I mean, computer designers use it all the time to mean specific platforms and how they work. But I use it more generally as any kind of relationship of self to world. So and usually, well, always, in fact, mediated, even in the most natural condition, we're mediated between consciousness and the world. Sorry, that sounds a bit academic. So postcards offer this as, you know, they're a medium of communication. And
Mark, can I ask you a question? Do you think that because we're all suffering, you know, being locked down with the pandemic, do you think boredom has changed with an element of stress that goes with it? Because being in the moment is very, very hard when you have fear. And a lot of people are suffering fear. So has it changed, do you think, in these last 10 months?
I absolutely do. I think it's been heightened and also altered because boredom really is a form of anxiety. And it even can lead to addictive behaviors, or at least quasi or semi addictive behaviors, and where you're constantly seeking stimulus to relieve your feelings of restlessness or instability. And when people are spending much of their time indoors and much of their time online, there's no question in my mind that it has changed and heightened. So,
do you have any solutions?
let's get some value out of you.
Well, yeah, really. Maria's in the lucky condition that even though the sea is cold, she can go for a swim. I mean, I wish I could go for a swim. Our state of embodiment, you know, the need to be kinetic. Has to be answered. So we spend too much time sitting. We need to get outside if we can, even for a short walk every day. And I think turn the screen off if you can. That takes some discipline, but you can acquire a new habit there. And I think that's really important. You know, we send messages all the time, but one of the things that postcards remind me of is the time difference. So this young man writes a postcard to his family, presumably, and that's a moment in time, and that's his state of mind at that moment. And then they receive it, and they get a message from the past in their present. But that's a connection between their two states of mind, and that's really what I think is so interesting about this particular medium. And really any old-fashioned mail.
It's a bit calmer than the instantaneous digital communication or this notion that when you're looking particularly on social media and this endless kind of the endless scrolling through things that are always present. There's always more. But they even leave your brain after a few seconds. They're sort of they're evanescent. There's nothing to them. Whereas if you get a postcard, you can hold it in your hand, you can turn it over, you can see what they've written on the front, you can use it as a bookmark. There's something a bit more satisfying, I suppose.
I think that's really true. And also, it doesn't demand an instant response, you know.
No.
You can just receive it as a gift, and it doesn't have to be reciprocal. And yeah, of course, the physicality, the materiality of the card itself, the image. There's really nothing that substitutes for that in my mind.
Yeah. Until you can't get in your spare room anymore. But anyway, that's my problem. Right. Well, thank you for taking us to New York, Mark. Now, Maria, what's the first card on your doormat?
Well, I chose two. I have to say, Tom, that I am as interested, I suppose this is being an actress and maybe a journalist, is that I'm as interested in the what people say on them as I am in the postcard itself. And I chose one that I'd found in one of my junk shops, a little like Mark, although he's 7 years ahead of me on 1912. This is from 1919. So, of course, you know, the flu pandemic was in its sort of, you know, at its height, really.
Gosh, how timely.
Yeah.
So this is the black and white image I'm looking at.
It's not mentioned. Sorry. It's the one, it's the Victorian ladies with their parasols for
lovely.
The sun.
Lovely.
And so this is a place in St. Leonard's-on-Sea. So it was posted from here to Ashford. Quite how it ended up here again, I don't know. To Mr. and Mrs. Sims in Mr. and Mrs. Sellers, I beg your pardon, in Ashford. And on the front, one of the two beautiful squares in St. Leonard's-on-Sea with Queen Victoria at the front. Now, obviously, in these modern days, at various events, people leave traffic cones on Queen Victoria's head and so
quite
on.
Quite right, too.
And once in a moment of mark boredom, I took my small dog down to Queen Victoria and a very lightweight ladder. And I put my dog in a bag and I balanced it over her scepter,
as it were,
and put some red, glittery Dorothy from Kansas shoes at the bottom of her. And then I took a series of photographs, which I then made into postcards myself.
Wow.
I may send you one of these
perfect.
For your records, Tom. And yes. I remember somebody saying to me as I removed my ladders, it was obviously a slow day, said, you know, oh, you've defiled Queen Victoria there. And I said, well, I think you'll find it's a statue not Queen Victoria at all.
This is a complex artwork you're involved in. This is brilliant.
Exactly. But I do like this picture because it's of the lovely square and the back houses that you see, rather grand houses, half of that was bombed in the war. And indeed,
oh, really?
Queen Victoria, there's two bullet holes in her. She's made of bronze. And there are two bullet holes in her, which people say were the Luftwaffe as they came over London, you know, came from London, and they dropped their bombs often before they hit the Channel.
Right.
And then they chucked a few bullets about. I'm not sure I believe that. I think it's one of those urban myths. But I love the ladies out perambulating with their brollies and their skirts sweeping up, you know, all the horse poo probably on the roads. And then in the bottom right hand corner.
Yes, what's going on there?
Well, I think that somebody's selling something. It's either someone playing an organ or something money, you know, down in the seaside, or it's somebody sort of making chestnuts or some such that you purchase. But also, again, this one has been written on, and it says lots of people down here just now. We're about 20 minutes from the sea. That's to Mr. and Mrs. Sellers, in case they were worried about how far they were from the sea. And
yes, could you give us an update?
What?
I said, could you give us an update of how many minutes you are from the sea, please?
Yes, exactly. This is to Mr. and Mrs. Sellers, and it says, Tuesday. Having a lovely time, and the weather has been perfect. They had a spectacular day here on Sunday. Going by coach to Alfriston this afternoon. There is an inn that was built in 1345, although it used to be a religious hostel for monks. So glad Vi cancelled her holiday with me, as I'm having a much better time.
Ooh.
Queen Victoria, as you can see here, is very regal and is made of bronze on a polished pink granite pedestal. Have met some charming gentlemen. This is the life. Love, Ivy.
Oh, I can see why you picked this one up.
I want to know about Vi. Why did Vi cancel the holiday? And, you know, why would she have spoilt it so?
Yes.
Clearly, Ivy is meeting more gentlemen herself.
Yes.
Without Vi being annoying.
I remember when I first started collecting these cards. I first started collecting these cards from that era, and I couldn't believe how fresh the messages were. They just jump out like a piece of, like they're talking to you in the same room. It's extraordinary.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Because it's not like writing. I think it's more like chatting. It's not like a proper letter.
I think people like to prove that they know what they're talking about. So, you know, her obviously has looked in her guidebook about Alfriston to find that there was an inn
yes.
that was built in 1345, but it used to be something other. And a little bit about Queen Victoria, as you can see here. And she's obviously done her research as to what it's made of and what
yes.
it's sitting on. So, you know, you want to sort of convey that you're having a nice time, but you also want to appear clever and that my life is better than yours.
Definitely, definitely. And just gossipy as well, though. It's lovely.
Yeah.
But have you noticed by the statue, there's some potted plants?
Yes. Well, I think people kept, because there were so few gardens, People kept this Warrior Square Gardens. There's still flowers, and you know it goes through the fashion, doesn't it? In the 60s, it was all garish colours. Now it's a little bit more sort of jungly garden with ferns right. and so on. And the council are very keen to keep to maintain that, the Warrior Good. Square Gardens.
Well, I was just going to say, apropos of the tone of that message, which I love, there's a huge chest of correspondence in this house in New Hampshire where my in-laws live, and many, many postcards in there. And one thing I've always, we sometimes bring them out, you know, after dinner to read, because the one thing that always strikes me is just what Maria was saying, this chattiness and gossipy quality and some of the slang, you know. So my spouse's great aunt was considered a racy young woman in her day. And she has one where she talks about going to dances and filling out her dance card. And then some of the swains were asking her out and she gave them the air. And I've always loved that phrase, which I don't know if
she gave them the what, Mark? The air?
The air, yeah, which I guess it's not British slang, but in American slang, it is to sort of turn away and reject them.
I see. You give them air rather than your face, rather than a response.
Yeah. Right. Or the finger. That.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I gave love him the air. Air.
It's lovely. It's a great phrase.
You have to say the air, though. You need the definite article.
The air.
Yeah.
But these are cards that actually are connected to your family, then.
Yes.
So they have a really more powerful meaning.
Yeah. Now, I don't have personal possession of any of them because they're sort of safely guarded in this strong box in the family place in New Hampshire. But yeah, they connect back to a whole history of in-laws that go generations. They've been, you know, since the Mayflower, in fact, on my spouse's side. They've been in New England. So, but all the different periods. And there was, you know, another wayward son who tried to get a job in radio and kept writing these hopelessly optimistic and self-delusional messages about the people, the interesting men that he was meeting in bars who had opportunities.
Does that get you into radio, Maria? I have no idea.
Yes, definitely. Almost certainly.
Very good. Well, thank you, Maria, for taking us to St. Leonard's and a bullet-ridden Queen Victoria. That's excellent. Another quick card from me now. This is a card of it's actually a Post Office Fellowship Centre, Dumbleton Hall, Worcestershire. On your dope sheet, it looks like a sort of rather grand building across a lake with some blossom and a sort of cedar tree, I think.
Is there a bridge there as well?
I think there is. Yes.
Yeah.
And this card was sent in 1987. It was sent to Totnes in Devon. And, it's just a little detail that appealed to me. It says, "Dear Nigel, how many key rings have you now? Did you carry on collecting or find some other things interesting?"
And, that's too adorable.
But as a collector, I can feel the pain around that. You know, haven't you stopped collecting yet? What's wrong with you?
And also key rings. How many you know, you only have so many keys. You can't use them all.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
You know, I don't know if this expression is in currency there either, but around here, when people want to make fun of collectors, they say, "Do you want to show me your penknife collection?" Because I don't know. And you know, you see penknives sort of throwaway items in every junk shop everywhere. And so people who collect penknives are kind of the hoarder eccentrics of the collecting world.
Well, I think that's rather cruel and unnecessary.
Yes. It's always a souvenir thing that something has, you know, St. Leonard's on Sea printed all the way through, and you can put that on a key ring, or you can put it on a beer mat, or you can put it on a penknife.
Yes.
And I always feel that that logo slightly spoils it.
You could scratch it off.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are philosopher Mark Kingwell and actress, presenter Maria McCurlan. Now, here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. And the postcard is... This isn't on your dope sheet, so it's a surprise for all. I'll hold it up to the microphone. There you go. It's an aeroplane from Braniff International. It's an American card, 1968. And it says, the answer is... French, Spanish, Mexican, American, Texan, Confederate. Well, I'm sorry, the Walsh family, that's the wrong answer. And on with the business of the podcast.
What was the question?
Oh, we'll I forget never know. That. I can't remember, Maria. Mark, what's the sticking card you've got for us?
My second postcard was not... sent person to person through the mail, although I did receive it in the mail. And this is, I think, a lovely image of a very famous Boston restaurant called Loch Ober Cafe, which opened in 1875 or thereabouts.
Looks great.
Although there may have been another cafe on the same site. It's right in downtown Boston. Winter Place is, anyone who's been to Boston will know it. It's part of the historic area. And the story for me about this was, my spouse Molly worked in a publishing firm in Boston for years when she was young, and all of the executives, all of the higher up, all of the men, of course, at that time, would go to lunch at Loch Ober and drink martinis. Yeah. And then come back and do nothing productive for the rest of the afternoon.
Wow.
And she had such a kind of combination of envy and resentment about the Loch Ober that when my older brother was living in Boston, I said, you know, we really have to go there so you can lay these demons to rest. And so we did. And you can see it's a small dining room, but it was a real fixture in sort of Belle Epoque Boston in the late 19th century. And there's some nice features on the card. You can see there are these quite elaborate steam tables on the right-hand side that are all worked by pulleys. And so all of the food is kept warm there and then served out. And down past the sort of fetching female painting around the corner is a little bar where they perfected a classic cocktail called the Ward 8. Which has to do with Boston politics, as most things do there.
I've seen reference to that cocktail before, yeah. I didn't know what it was.
It's a good cocktail. It's if anybody's interested, I wrote a book about cocktails. So it's rye whiskey, lemon juice, orange juice, and grenadine.
You heard it here. You heard it here.
What is it called? What's it called again? Ward 8, Mark?
Ward 8, yeah. So
What does that refer to?
Well, it's the way that cities are broken up in some jurisdictions into wards.
Okay.
And Ward 8 was a classic swing ward. So there used to be a term, I don't think it's used anymore, called a ward healer, who was the person who brought the ward to the vote when there was a municipal election through bribery or threats or whatnot.
Thank God those days are gone.
So it's a wonderful picture, though, Mark. I really love the bath stalls on the right-hand side. And, I mean, it does look like a sort of rather feminine version of a gentleman's club. You say it was all the men that went there. But it's quite a sort of feminine-looking place with all the sconces and the lovely chandeliers.
Yeah, and you can see the stools are this beautiful construction of wrought iron. The story was... I went there with Molly, and we had a wonderful dinner with my brother and sister-in-law. And then in 1992, I think, they had to close down. And what they did was they sold off all of the, you know, movable items.
Ooh. So, I like where this is going.
What did you get?
Well, I got this postcard. That was one small thing. And I got some napkins. Okay. And some flatware. Basically, they were selling everything that they you know could get rid of. And
I thought you were going to say you got the picture of the girl at the end,
or the bath stools in wrought iron.
Yeah.
I wish, but not so easy. The other thing is, this is a tiny detail, but they claim to have invented what are known here as tater tots, which are a tiny little mashed potato fritters. You can get them frozen and they're terrible, but they had handmade freshly fried tater tots, and I'm happy to say that I had quite a few when we were there.
If it's a signature dish, you got to have it.
Yes.
Very good. And so you this was your souvenir of it closing down. You got it then.
That's right. And also to loop back to, Molly's experience, because now I feel like there are three moments, when she was young as an intern at this publishing house called Little Brown, when we were actually able to go there and we had a wonderful dinner. But you could feel the decay kind of creeping on. I mean, that was more than, 125 years, 125 years after it opened. And then when it closed... just trying to get a little piece of material history there.
But lunch doesn't really exist anymore, does it, in proper jobs, I don't think?
That's a good point. I quite agree with you. I think, it's no longer... what did Gordon Gekko say in Wall Street? Lunch is for wimps or losers. I think nowadays people don't eat lunch because they're on the screen all day.
Yeah,
you have a smoothie.
Yeah, right.
What is it? They say Al Desco.
Right. That's right.
Which is a horrible thing to say. Well, that's very good. Thank you for. I kind of wish I'd been there for Ward 8 now, but you can stare into these postcards and wish you were there, but you don't get any closer.
It's true, but you can mix it yourself, Tom, at home.
I'll give it a go. I'll listen back, take down the recipe, and see what I can do. Now, Maria, what's the final card you've got for us? This is a floral card.
Well, yes, it's a floral card, and it's actually a card that I picked up, and it was quite expensive because it's from the 1940s, and it wasn't written on, and it doesn't actually look like a postcard. It looks like a painting, a very small painting, and it's of the flowers of the Alps in Switzerland. And there is a signature on the bottom hand right, but I haven't, my eyes aren't good enough to see what it says, and yours won't be either.
Not on a scan.
But I loved sort of the falling petals. I loved the kind of the very vibrant colours, and also that the central flowers are standing tall. And then, of course, you drift to the edges and your petals start to fall. I'd liked it as a metaphor for my 92-year-old mother.
Right.
And that is who I sent it to.
Lovely.
She wouldn't have understood the metaphor. She would have just liked the pretty colours. I sent it to her on the 23rd of the 3rd last year when we went into lockdown. And I just felt as I'd chosen a card from 1919 when there was a pandemic, I'd choose one that I sent to my mum, and she kindly sent it back to me for this. And I wanted to know what my thoughts were last year when we went into a lockdown, which was just the most ridiculous thing I'd ever experienced, it felt like. And I loved the card, and I stuck it onto a larger card so I could send this to my mum. And I'll read you what I said. It's not old, but here we are. Dear Mum, well, this is all a bit of a horror, isn't it? Try not to worry too much. We're all being safe and very careful. I cycled to Beck's Hill today for my exercise and then swam in the sea. Gorgeous sunny day, but very cold. All work has been cancelled. Agent said it will only be for 2 weeks. I'm laughing now. But I think it's more likely to be a month, at least. The roads are completely empty and last night's dog walk felt very eerie and otherworldly. A terrible virus that no one seems to know that much about. Mum, outcomes are very poor for the sick and elderly, so it's a good job you gave up your disco dancing and clubbing habit when you did. Trump seems to think it will disappear in the warm weather, but we all know that he is an insane idiot. I hope your carer Sabrina managed to win the boxing match we sponsored and that she's keeping you amused with all her lovely chats. I am going to try and use this time to finish my book. We'll see. Please look after yourself. Use your walker. Don't fall over. The NHS is way too stretched to be dealing with you. I hope to see you towards the end of May, praying to all the gods. Big love, Maria, brackets, the blonde one. She has three daughters.
Beautiful, Maria. That's beautiful. You had everything in there. I mean, you were kind of prescient because all the issues that have arisen over the last year, whatever it is, you've kind of touched on them all, even on the 23rd of March.
Well, yes, the first day of lockdown, I kind of felt that I wanted to make sure she was okay, because I was clearly not feeling okay, hence, you know, mad cycling and swimming. And and I wanted her to know that we were okay, she not to worry about us, even though I, of course, was very worried. And, you know, Trump has been on everyone's mind for the last 4 years and mercifully not any longer. Apart from impeachment, whether or not that goes through. And, you know, there's nothing much that goes on in my mother's life apart from with her lovely carer, Sabrina, and the chats and so on. So it's quite hard to write to somebody who, sadly, her eyes have now diminished so much in the last year that I cannot send her any more postcards. So it's one I sent her. It's quite sad.
Yes. Well, it was a lovely one. It really was. And it was a lovely picture, actually.
Isn't it the most beautiful picture from the 1940s?
Where did you get it from?
Of course, one of my junkie shops.
Good,
I mean,
good.
I'm very, very jealous of Mark going to the sort of, you know, end-of-life sale for that lovely restaurant.
I wanted to add, you know, one of the things that I find haunting about the image in my postcard right now is that the restaurant's empty.
Of course, I mean,
It's closed as of 2012, as I said, but... like many people, I really enjoy eating out with friends and you know, going to have drinks and so on. And one of the biggest deficits in life lately has been that lack of socializing possibility. So
yeah,
I don't go to discos anymore, but I do like to go to restaurants when it's possible.
But if you're producing postcards of a restaurant, you kind of have a problem. You either go for the empty one, which risks looking like a ghost story or like something from The Shining. Or you have people sitting there and then you have a danger that they look dreadful. So you kind of, it's not easy to do a restaurant postcard, I don't think.
But don't you love, though, Tom, all the sort of, you know, the staged restaurants or bars or whatever from the 60s,
yes,
where they clearly just got lots of models in gorgeous miniskirts and pointy shoes and bouffant hair, you
yes
know, to be sitting, sipping cocktails and looking very chic. Because the idea, again, with a postcard is to make it look aspirational and that, you know, I wish you were here, although I don't really because I'm having a nice time on my own. But it's a shame you're not here is what people are really saying when they say that.
Yes, I wish you were here is underlining the fact that you're not here, isn't it? You know? But Yabu sucks, you're not here.
Yeah, it's a bit of that.
Well, and Who was it in your first postcard, Maria, the person who would be the mood killer who if she had come on the vacation?
Oh, the mood killer. Yes, that was Vi or something, wasn't it?
Vi, yeah.
I'm glad I didn't come with them because I'm having a much better time.
That is glad you're not here, isn't it? Glad she wasn't here.
Well, apparently she cancelled, you see, the holiday they were going together, and then she cancelled. And she was glad that she cancelled because it actually meant that she had a much nicer time. I want to know what she sent, the postcard she sent to Vi. Sorry you're not here. It was such a shame you had to cancel.
Rubbing her nose in it. Well, look, thank you both so much for these cards. We've gone from, you know, New York to Boston to St. Leonard's to some slightly wilting flowers, and from 1919 to last year. I've said it before, I don't never know where the postcards will send us. I'm delighted you share them with me and with the listeners and with each other. Another quick reminder for everyone at home, images of these cards are going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can have a look, see that we haven't made it all up, including one last one in the past postcard style. And this is a multi-view of five windmills in Norfolk with a rather jaunty kind of playbill typography, Windmills of Norfolk, as if you were looking at some music hall or something. And this is a very 1970s card, three-piece stamp. And the windmills, if you want to know, are Thurn Mill, Howe Hill, Hunsett Mill, Clay Next the Sea and Horning Mill, for windmill fans. And this was sent to Minehead in Somerset. And it just gives you a tiny fragment of someone's holiday experience. This is what I like about these cards sometimes. You just get the smallest sliver of something. It says, having good fun, David broken a window. And, you know, that's the bit you remember if you're a kid. That's the bit you remember, definitely.
David broken a window.
Yeah, typical. Bloody David. Well, dear listeners, before we let Maria and Mark log off and bake some banana bread or whatever we're supposed to be doing, I've got one more postcard for you both. Now, it's customary for us to end the show with one of these things. I would normally pass it across in the studio. We can't do that. But it is printed out with my my guests here. And Maria, can you describe this strange postcard we have here?
Well, it's a rather lovely picture. It could be a wedding photograph, in fact. There's a beautiful, I would say from the hairstyles, it looks kind of 60s, maybe a little earlier. A beautiful woman on the right with sort of curled front of her hair with beaming smile and dark eyes. And she is dancing with an equally gorgeous blonde head, slick back with Brill Cream or whatever, gentleman. And he's wearing a bow tie and a white jacket. She's got beautiful painted nails and a gorgeous bracelet. That matches her necklace. I'm sure it must be a wedding photograph.
Well, can you see anything unusual about the card?
It's got a sort of ring around it, almost like a coffee stain, but quite large. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, but it's not a coffee stain. These are the grooves of a record. It is a musical postcard.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Now, by a certain amount of foresight and planning, young Tom at Wardour Studio Central has this record as a digital file, and I think if we listen very carefully, we'll be able to hear it. There you go.
That is so amazing.
Every star's a wishing star that shines for you.
One thing that I noticed is there's the four focus technique here, which is quite unusual. So the couple is in sharp focus and the background is out of focus to create that effect of depth, which you see more and more now. Even on television. I've seen these before. I've never owned one.
Well, I'm always amazed by the quality because it's pretty good.
It's incredible.
Obviously hasn't been played very much.
No, and this one hasn't been through the post either. It's not got a message on the back. It may have been sent in an envelope.
It's slightly frustrating because I'm rather keen to know who these people are, but now you tell me it's a record, they're clearly just models, hence the rather gorgeous.
Yes, I think they're just models.
Oh.
You know, I wondered what the white spot was, and of course now we know it's how you put it on the
on the spindle
turntable. Yeah.
Ah, yes. I wonder where they are now and how old they are now, if they're still alive.
Oh, they won't be young. Well, as the handsome, mysterious couple from Brussels rotated exactly 45 revolutions per minute, that's it for this time on Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Maria McCurlan and Mark Kingwell. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure, Tom. Thank you for having me on.
And thank you all for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.